Trubisky. Intercepted. Marshawn Lattimore. Lattimore returns it across midfield, and that'll ice it for New Orleans.
It's download time for the Monday evening quarterback. 312-981-7200. If you watch the Bears game, questions, comments, thoughts about the future of this franchise. Adam Hogue, of course, covers the Bears. WGNradio.com/Bears for all of his stuff, including the podcast. And he, of course, covered the game yesterday. Adam, wow. 20-12 loss for the Chicago Bears. And as I said in the carryout, they had us thinking 4-4, and you never know. But 3-5, and we're looking at a bye. And the 2018 season.
Yeah, I mean, you zoom in on just yesterday and you put it in a box and you say, man, that was a missed opportunity, right, to be 4-4 and in the thick of things. But you zoom out and you talk about that what the expectations were for the start of the season and the teams that they played in the first half of the season, the quarterbacks they played in the first half of the season, and really – 3-5 is not that bad for this team and the limitations they clearly still have on offense.
And one of the things that we can look forward to as Chicago Bears fans and be optimistic about our young quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky, who's now a starter. And yesterday they seemed to take a little bit of the reins off of him as he threw 32 passes, something like that. But let's start at the beginning. I mean, the big story of this game, of course, was injury. Zach Miller dislocating his knee, having to have emergency surgery after the fact on a touchdown in late in the game that essentially was should have been a touchdown that the officials have tried to explain wasn't a touchdown. I mean, your piece on WGNradio.com today explains it all. But I mean, there's a lot of inconsistencies in what the NFL is saying today.
Yeah, now the problem is they're not saying anything. I actually reached out to the league today for further comments or explanation on what the actual call was, because Carl Cheffers, the referee, really did not do a good job of explaining this in a pool report after the game yesterday. And for those that don't understand how that works, it's not ideal. But basically, when a play like that happens, we can request through the team's media relations departments that we want some kind of comment from the referee. And it's not like he holds a press conference. They home team's pro football writers representative in the media ends up getting a couple questions with the referee in that situation. So in this case, it was the Saints representative for the Pro Football Writers Association, and it wasn't one of the Bears writers that got to ask the questions. I don't know if that had any impact on the interview because I wasn't there for the interview, but yeah. In the end, Carl Cheffer's explanation really did not clear anything up at all. All he said was the ball hit the ground. We don't know when they thought it hit the ground. Was it at the moment? I thought it could have hit the ground in two spots. One, when he hit the ground, when he first made contact with the ground, but there was no shot that showed, no television shot showed the ball hitting the ground there. There was definitely not indisputable evidence to overturn it on that. So was it through the process of the catch, and when he rolled over, Zach Miller grabbed his leg and at that point let go of the ball?
Yeah.
But as Dean Blandino, who used to have this exact job for the NFL a year ago, explained on the Fox broadcast, at that point the process of the catch had already been completed.
Yeah,
it was a bad call.
It really was. And even for Bears fans, as we all, you know, held our breath watching the Miller injury, I mean, I didn't even realize it was being reviewed. I mean, there was like a moment in the broadcast where they were saying, you know what, we're not even going to show this replay because of the horrific nature of the leg injury. And we were just all thinking, oh, man, that's terrible for a player that's actually having a productive season. And then here, oh, yeah, and also he dropped it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a surreal moment for a football fan and to understand how to feel about it.
Unfortunately, in the stadium, we did know they were reviewing it, and they showed the replay over and over and over and over and over again in the Superdome. They wouldn't stop showing it to the point where the crowd was started to boo. They don't want to see it. And some of the Bears players thought it was disrespectful for them to continue to play the replay, and I can't disagree. It was a weird decision by whoever was running the video operations inside the Superdome.
Now, you know, as we move on from talking about this injury, I mean, the latest in Zach Miller is that it was a successful surgery. There was concern about amputation. There were concern about ligaments, but it seems like, you know, up to this point that at least it was a successful operation.
Yeah, and let me give you some of the details here from what we know. But basically, like any other situation, it's hard for the doctors and the trainers run out there. They see what's going on. It's obviously a serious knee injury. They're able to diagnose that pretty quickly. Doctors come out, and you know, I don't know if at any point do they look up at the Jumbotron to see what really happened. I'm not sure that matters at that moment. But it was very obvious that Zach Miller had a serious knee injury. So they bring the cart out. They put it in an air cast. We've all seen that before. But at some point, they realized that this was more serious than that. And there was suspicion that the artery had actually been severed. And according to Chris Mortensen from ESPN, he reported a couple hours ago that the vascular surgeons praised team doctor Mark Bowen for identifying the vascular problem ASAP by checking Miller's dropping pulse. So, I mean, that gives you some kind of detail how serious this situation elevated, probably after we saw him carted off the field and back to the locker room. When you have a severed artery, but there's no open wound, that can be hard to diagnose, right?
So
it was his pulse dropping where they realized there was a problem. They rushed him to the hospital, and he needed emergency surgery to save his leg. And when that we all felt awful for Zach Miller yesterday when just seeing the video and knowing what he's been through in his career and how many injuries he's been through. And really, he's one of the better guys in the entire league. He's a great teammate. He has three kids at home. And we already felt bad. So this morning, when it was first reported that he was in danger of losing his leg, I was speechless. And honestly, I felt sick to my stomach because Not many things are fair when it comes to football, and this is a brutal game, but this situation is not fair. So when I heard that it was a successful surgery, and at least right now they are hopeful that he will be able to keep his leg, I was so happy because at this point it seems like continuing on with football is a long shot, but this is beyond football. You just want him to live a happy, healthy life from this point on.
Absolutely. It becomes less football, more life. That touchdown, which was taken away, was not didn't change the outcome of the game. I mean, it would have obviously put the Bears in a better position to win that game. But we'll talk about what happened on the field before and after that play. Adam Hoge, 312-981-7200. We'll talk about what we saw from Mitchell Trubisky and, of course, the Bears' defense consistently showing up and once again having a tremendous showing on the road against one of the best quarterbacks of all time, Drew Brees. All right, it's Monday Evening Quarterback. Stay with us.
Third and 10, Trubisky to the end zone. Touchdown, Zach Miller. 25-yard touchdown pass from Trubisky to Miller, and Miller is still down in the end zone.
We're not going to show you the replay.
The receiver lost control of the ball. The ball hit the ground. It is an incomplete pass. It'll be fourth down at the 45-and-a-half-yard line.
Wow, indeed. It's the Monday Evening Quarterback here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. If you want to get in on the action, Adam Hoge on the line. He covers the Bears, of course, for WGN. You can see him. I mean, you can read his stuff, see him, hear him everywhere. Adam is a great insider for our Bears coverage. He also on Mondays gets a better look at some of the film, and we can have a better understanding of what actually happened on Sunday. The Bears lose to the Saints. Takeaways from this game, Adam, why don't we start with the offense? Mitchell Trubisky, the most passes he's thrown as a rookie in any game, and how did he do? I mean, it seemed okay.
Yeah. It's going back and watching the tape today, it confirmed a lot of what I thought watching live, which, by the way, was kind of hard for me yesterday. I did not have the greatest view in that Superdome press box, which is located up in space. But nonetheless, you know, getting a closer look today, you know, it was, of the four games of his I've graded, the lowest grade that I've given him. It wasn't terrible, though. To me, he looks like a rookie. You know, he looks like a rookie, which he is, and he doesn't have a whole lot of help out there right now. So I still see a lot of good, more good than bad. But his accuracy was kind of all over the place yesterday. Yeah. He missed some throws high. He had a couple he'd probably like to have back. So it wasn't – but there were some good decisions that were made, tucking the ball at the right times. Although there was one time he tucked the ball too early and he had Trey McBride open kind of right in front of him. Actually, I think that was the play right before he busted off the big run for 46 yards. Right. So it was up and down, and I don't think it's anything worth panicking over. But as he gets more and more starts under his belt, the microscope obviously gets more intense, and then you see Deshaun Watson put up 400 yards in Seattle and all these other things that really have nothing to do with the Bears right now, but it's just going to increase the scrutiny.
The one thing I will say is that when we were first introduced to Mitchell Trubisky in that Monday Night Football game against the Vikings, it felt like the game plan was to roll him out. He also did a great job of evading the pass rush. There was one time he got, I think it was a strip sack. But what we liked about Mitchell Trubisky was this fact that when there was pressure, he got out of it. And we've seen over the last couple weeks, and this game including, that part of it almost seems to be, it almost feels like they're coaching him out of that. Like, stay where you're at, stay close, you know, go through your progressions, don't roll out. He doesn't have the same sort of he's not doing what we saw and what we thought the kind of quarterback Mitchell Trubisky was. There are some times he's rolled out, there's no doubt about it, and it was great to watch him take off, especially for the big run. But there are far too many times that he is getting sacked in this way that we saw him evade that earlier on against Minnesota.
Yeah, I think that's true. However, I mean, you look at each individual game. I mean, last week against the Panthers, or was that 2 weeks now against the Ravens? Which game was it where he was taking those sacks, just to be conservative?
Yeah, that was the week after, right, yeah.
They're starting to blend together now. But when he was taking some of those sacks the last couple of weeks when he had the lead, I think a lot of that was to be conservative and just to make sure they weren't throwing the ball away. They also weren't rolling him out as much with the lead. They weren't throwing the ball really at all. So the one thing about this game yesterday was it confirmed a lot of what we thought going into the game, which was the Bears probably won't have the lead, and they'll probably have to throw the ball more. So, you know, I guess I don't know if disappointed is the right word, but knowing what we knew going into this game, I think the hope was, right, that he would excel under this situation, that he, with the offense kind of opened up a little bit more and the need to throw more, he would kind of come out of his shell and take over the game. I mean, he had the opportunity to in the fourth quarter. He ends up throwing the interception. So I just thought the inconsistencies throughout the game were a little disappointing, but I think not worth panicking over because, again, there's still not many wide receivers getting open. The offensive line shuffling yesterday, the times he did get sacked, I didn't think he had any chance to get out of it.
Once again, and we talked about this last week and even the week before, you know, the inability for wide receivers to get separation or anyone in tight ends and running backs as well, as and how that affects the Bears' offense, that's one way. But, you know, as I think about it, what concerned me as well is, and I don't know what there's a stat for this, but it seems like this Bears' offense has more third downs than any other offense in football. Like, it just feels like their first and second downs are designed to get two to three yards. It felt like Mitchell Trubisky's at a third and four, a third and five the entire game. I understand that. And the success they had, I think the big play to McBride was a first down throw. They're mixing it up. But it once again felt, I guess it's the P word, that predictability, that the Bears are finding themselves third and mid-range throughout. And that can't be good when you have receivers that can't get separation.
Yeah, and you're probably right. That is something I could look up, you know, with a little bit more notice. But it does seem like they are playing a lot of third downs, and it's probably true because the thing is you know, they're not as good offensively as most teams, so it's harder for them to pick up 10 yards. and get the next first down. Yeah. It just is. We're seeing a lot of inconsistency in the running game. I mean, sometimes Jordan Howard's busting off big runs, and then other times he's getting pushed backwards. And I think the negative runs are piling up a little bit too much. I think that's and then that immediately gets you behind the chains and then makes it harder on third down. You know, a couple of plays I did give Trubisky high marks for in this game did come on third down, yeah. Some third down completions. So, again, a lot of good, a lot of bad, but here's one takeaway I do have. It's been four games now. There's really only one awful throw, or one awful decision, I should say, that he's made, and that was the interception against the Vikings, which was still a high-pressure situation.
And you could make an argument that that Pro Bowl safety did a number on Mitchell Trubisky, but I digress, right?
True. Well, no, and it was a great play by him. There's no question, you give him credit. But that was really just the one decision you'd like to have back where you say, all right, it wasn't fourth down, throw the ball away, you get another down. Yesterday, the interception was just a poor throw. He overthrew his receiver. It wasn't a bad decision. So I think that's something positive, that a four starts for a rookie who only got 13 starts in college, he's really only made one really bad decision. Right. That's impressive.
It is impressive. Tariq Cohen starting to again, it's interesting, a rookie who at the beginning of the season we thought was going to be the human joystick all the way through, has had his ups and downs, but he seemed to have a nice game as a compliment. He missed the announcers made such a big deal about him mistiming his jump on a high Trubisky throw in that, I think it was in the second half.
I thought that was just a poor throw.
Yeah, I mean, he threw it high. But I mean, again, there are components. I mean, we saw more production out of McBride. We saw Kendall Wright a little bit in this game. Of course, Zach Miller at some point. But, I mean, it seems like maybe there's a little bit of optimism growing about some of the Bears' components on the offensive side of the ball.
Sure. I mean the problem with Cohen right now is without enough weapons around him elsewhere on the offense, it's kind of too predictable.
When he's in the game, he's going to get the ball. Right.
Yeah, and it's just he's also I don't know if it's him struggling in the running game as much as when he has not picked up a whole lot of yardage on straight running plays lately. And so that makes it harder to get him involved in other ways. However, he did have some good plays yesterday. He still is a weapon catching the football, and I mean, that was a heck of a jump he had on the touchdown. Right. I mean, that's a play
from
not too many running backs.
Yeah, that was Michael Jordan like. Yeah.
Right. So, and then the kick return too was huge at the end of the game to give the Bears a shot. Yeah. That was a big play. And so that's something you like to see too. So you're still seeing talent from Cohen. I'd like to see him on the field more. His snaps are still, you know, limited the last few weeks. I think on a team with not a whole lot of weapons, you need to get those weapons that you do have on the field more. So I kind of take issue with that. And you know, at this point, Jordan Howard can't catch the ball. We just got to understand that. And so stop throwing to him. And in those situations, get Cohen out there.
Yeah. So ridiculous. All right. We'll come back the second half of Monday Evening Quarterback. We got to talk about the defense. That is the pride and joy of the city of Chicago right now. The defense, once again, I mean, Drew Brees, that offense is a juggernaut. It has shown 400 plus all year long. He's throwing, they're putting 50 points up, 52 points up against the Lions. I mean, they can score, and to be in a game where they are at home and Drew Brees can't get in the end zone, that is impressive for Chicago Bears defense that is getting national attention. Adam Hoge, WGN Radio Sports, covers the Bears for us here. He's the Monday Evening Quarterback, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break, get an update on tonight's news, and then get back at Adam, 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
Trubisky to Cohen, who goes over the top. No sign yet. They're going to say he's short. Now
it should be a
touchdown.
They're
rolling in a touchdown. A
couple calls go the Bears' way. How do you go for two? Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So that worked out. It's Monday Evening Quarterback here on the Download 720 WGN. Breaking down with Adam Hoge what we saw from the Bears' loss to the Saints yesterday. The Bears now at 3-5 at the halfway mark of the season. They got a bye week coming up after that. They'll be at home against the Green Bay Packers without Aaron Rodgers. Adam Hoge, of course, covers the Bears for WGN Radio. You can find out all his great stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. All right, let's get to the positives, something that a takeaway. I was very skeptical this week, Adam, when we were talking about the Bears defense and they were getting such notoriety for their big games in the last couple weeks. But I was like, yeah, if they don't get the random turnovers and the ball that kind of bounces their way, they're middle of the pack. But what I saw yesterday was a team that, when their back was against the wall, they kept the Bears in the game. There would be no game. When the Bears went down 14-0, I thought this game was going to be a blowout. So it was amazing to watch how the Chicago Bears, with not a lot of support on the defensive side of the ball, they actually held up to the claim that they're one of the best in the league.
They did, and you know, there was that moment, I think second quarter, where their run defense got a little bit leaky. The Saints were able to hit some big runs on them, get down the field, but Pernell McPhee gave a little pep talk on the sidelines to the defense, and they really, you know, they fixed their issues there and had a great second half against the Saints. It really, this defense is for real. And I think a moment like that against a good offense where, okay, you start to wonder, all right, are they going to – is this kind of a reality check against a good team? Maybe they're not as good as we thought. They come together, they buckle down, they make their adjustments, and they're led by a great defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, right now. And 3 years into this system implementation, they're looking pretty good. So,
they are.
I give them a lot of credit. They're for real, and it's a big reason why I think the Bears have, you know, can be optimistic about the second half of the season.
I just was really impressed at the Chicago Bears' bend not break philosophy. It reminded me a lot of the Lovie Smith defenses yesterday, in the sense that when it got to a third and four and it felt like they were moving and it was going to be an easy drive, out of nowhere, they force a punt. They were doing it all game. It was amazing to watch how it looked like, oh, geez, here comes Drew Brees. Oh, he just connected on a 26-yarder, you know, on the sideline. Oh, it's just going to be a matter of time. And then they'd be like, well, nice deflect. Oh, fourth down, punt. And then they did that all game.
Well, and how about them coming up with two forced fumbles in the fourth quarter on Mark Ingram when you badly need the ball? And there, you know, there. This is a great sign to see them have that mentality of, hey, that ball's mine. Like on every play, because
absolutely,
let's not forget, earlier in the game, Christian Jones knocked the ball loose, and it turned out that the runner's knee was down. But it was very, very close, and the fact he knocked it loose, it's a great play. And then you had the hit on Kyle Fuller on Mark Ingram on that swing pass.
Yep.
Where it looked like the ball came out in midair, and amazingly, I looked at that play closely today because I thought the Bears maybe should have reviewed that, but Ingram actually managed to regain control of it in the middle of the air, and then it popped out again when his elbow hit the ground, so that would technically be the ground causing the fumble, The ball came loose, so you've seen multiple times within this game, and then in the fourth quarter, when you need to get the offense the ball, they did it twice. Like Adrian Amos just goes in there and rips it out and takes it away. That's very, very encouraging for a defense that struggled for really 4 years to force takeaways.
You mentioned some of the weak points on the defensive front. Got a little leaky in the running game. The other, which I guess is going to happen in NFL games, but the late in the game when they really needed a turnover, Drew Brees went deep, underthrew.
Yeah.
And Eddie Jackson was in position, which looked like he was – and he I don't know if it was just a – he just had a brain moment where he brain freeze, like he didn't know where the ball was, but it looked like a pretty dumb play. He didn't even turn around and they caught the ball, right?
Eddie Jackson didn't have a great game yesterday. Adrian Amos took a small step back too. He wasn't horrible, but he had a couple of missed tackles. So the back end of that defense wasn't as dominant, and that play was bad. That play was bad. It was really an ill-advised throw by Drew Brees, and I, especially when you zoom out and you look at the all 22. I mean, he was that receiver was never covered, and Kyle Fuller had help from Eddie Jackson there. It was double coverage all the way, and in that situation, in that moment, really an ill-advised decision by Drew Brees, but he gets away with it.
Yeah.
because Eddie Jackson just never located the football. In a situation where Kyle Fuller's running stride for stride with the receiver, you can take a chance to look up and try to find the football.
And he didn't. I don't know what happened there, but that of course, and you know, again, we've talked about this week after week, but this idea that the Bears need to learn how to win. And in this game, the game was there for them. That play would have been in a situation. I have to call out once again special teams lining up in the neutral zone to make a field goal, now a touchdown, or a Connor Barth who in a dome can't hit a 49-yard field goal. I mean, we start to see these little things that add up to be trouble for a Bears team that needs to play mistake-free to win ball games.
And that goes back to just the overall talent across the roster. The defense is great. You're seeing that phase of the game make enough plays. Yes, Eddie Jackson did not make that play on that specific pass, but for the most part, over the last four games, we've seen this defense kind of morph into a defense that mostly makes those plays. So, and he's still a rookie, so maybe you give him a pass just for that. But you're absolutely right that the other two phases are just not quite there. They can't afford to make mistakes, and yet they still are. So they're holding back this defense that looks like certainly a playoff caliber defense, and you could take it a step forward. I think their D-line is actually Super Bowl caliber defensive line. It's that position group. So you can't have mistakes continue to happen on offense and special teams. And the special teams right now, they miss Sherrick McManus. Kyle Fuller never even would have been in. Not that there's an excuse for lining up off sides. It can't happen. But usually Sherrick McManus would be out there in that spot, and that never would have happened. And then Connor Barth, they got to figure out. They got a bye week here. They got to figure out their kicker situation because you can't have that guy. You got to make that kick in a dome. You're absolutely right.
You know, and I kind of referenced it earlier in the show, but this is the town that in the past we've been okay with a mediocre to less than offense because our defense was special and our special teams were special. We saw in this town with Robbie Gould and Devin Hester, who, you know, you felt like and a Pro Bowl cover team and people, you know, that were constantly covered, that would make a difference. It was okay if Rex Grossman or Kyle Orton or whatever quarterback you want to throw out doesn't make a third and three because your defense is going to go out there. They're going to force a punt. Devin Hester is going to make something magical. You saw how football worked and the way that it was all together. And in this case, you see they're just not there in the sense that this special teams unit, it almost feels like it's John Fox's bugaboo. He doesn't care about the returner. He doesn't care about the kicker. You know, I just feel like there's nothing special coming out of that unit.
That's true for the most part. I will give you one sign of hope, though. We know Sherrick McManus is a great special teamer. Josh Bellamy's pretty good. The last couple weeks, DeAndre Houston Carson, a six-round pick a couple years ago, who has basically been a non-factor since he got drafted, has really started to pop on tape a little bit more on special teams as a cover guy. He's getting down the field. He's making some plays. So sometimes injuries create a little bit more depth because other guys get more opportunity, and DeAndre Houston Carson has looked pretty good. Let's not forget Cunningham's been out too. Benny Cunningham's a good special teamer. So you get and Nick Kwiatkowski's now back out there on special teams. He didn't play last week because he's still kind of coming from that pec, and Christian Jones is playing so well right now that he's not giving up his inside linebacker job. So Kwiatkowski was out on special teams, and he made a couple plays yesterday. So I'm saying if McManus comes back, Benny Cunningham gets more healthy, you have Kwiatkowski, you have DeAndre Houston Carson, all of a sudden you're creating a little bit more depth on that special teams unit, at least from a coverage standpoint. They should be better in the second half of the season.
I want to get to the trade tonight. There was a big trade where the 49ers traded with the New England Patriots. I also want to talk about Jarrell Freeman, but let me get some of these texts in as well. 847 sure. says, maybe we should check the water in this town. Isn't it ironic the Cubs, the Bears, and the Blackhawks all have offensive problems? So it's a defensive town. 779 says, overall Bears grade B. Okay, we'll take that. And 312, and this is a question I have as well, says, with a terrible injury to Zach Miller, we get a chance to see Adam Shaheen.
Yeah.
Is that obviously it's not a silver lining's not the right call because we all wish for Zach Miller to get better, and obviously no one wishes anyone to get hurt. But we did draft this guy in the second round. He was drafted before the wideout who's now killing it in Pittsburgh.
Juju Smith-Schuster.
Right,
yeah.
Smith-Schuster. So there's a lot of questions that surround Adam Shaheen and whether or not he's worth the high pick that Ryan Pace put on him.
Yeah, and it's kind of tough to evaluate right now. What I will say is he's been playing more the last few weeks, and it's because his blocking is getting better, and that has been noticeable on tape. So you're seeing him get more reps. But this guy was drafted to really be a receiving threat, a dynamic receiving threat. They called him Baby Gronk in college. Now, he's coming from Ashland University, a D2 school that I had never even heard of until they drafted him. So there's obviously an adjustment period, and that's manifested itself a little bit more in the blocking. But, and I think I said this to you last week, let's not panic about Shaheen's targets or lack thereof, because he's playing behind two other tight ends that are going to obviously be on the field ahead of him, Zach Miller and Deion Sims. Well, now Zach Miller's out. And there was a moment earlier in this game, and I actually tweeted this out before the play because I thought it was a perfect situation to get Adam Shaheen involved. And that was when the Bears had the third down and goal and were driving early in the football game. And I thought it was a great opportunity to target Shaheen because there's not a whole lot of tape on him. And back in OTAs and training camp, when the entire public didn't see this, he really did look like a baby Gronk. Like, he looked really good. But it's a reminder that, hey, training camp's not the same as the regular season. And he gets Von Bell, the Saints safety, lined up on him in one-on-one man coverage. And Bell just jams him at the line of scrimmage, disrupts his route, and the whole play is off. And Trubisky basically throws the ball over his head because he wasn't open.
Right.
But Shaheen's like twice the size of Bell. Like, that shouldn't happen. But it's easy for us to say that shouldn't happen because of his size, because he didn't get that kind of coverage in college. He's never really been through this in a regular season NFL game. So hopefully that's a learning experience for him, and he'll understand in the future that you can't rely on the play action on that, because there was a play action element to that play. You can't just rely on that to get you open. You have to match the physicality of the safeties that are going to line up against you. Yeah. And you just look at Gronk. He's so good at that. He gets himself open. So I'm not ready to panic yet, but these are some of these adjustments that Adam Shaheen better figure out very quickly now that Zach Miller's out.
Let's go to Mike. Mike, you're on the Monday Evening Quarterback with Adam Hogue.
Hey, guys. Huge fan, Hogue. And Justin, I'm newly a listener to your show, but I love what you do, man, every night.
Thank you, buddy.
Listen, Adam, please tell me that they're going to go out during the bye week and find another kicker somewhere, because every time this Bart guy gets out there, I mean, ever since last year when they got rid of Gold for no reason or whatever, however long it's been now, maybe it's been two seasons, I don't even know. But thing is, I just cringe every time this guy's about to kick because I know he's going to miss.
He misses a lot.
Oh, my God. What's the deal?
Great question, Mike. You know? Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for the call, Mike. And look, I actually put this up, and I said this on the post game show with Hamp, Obi, and Kaz yesterday. I put the kicker situation right up there with the wide receivers as the two things that I think you do pin on the front office as not giving enough attention to in the offseason. And you question some of the scouting decisions there because, first of all, they never should have gotten rid of Robbie Gould. But that sometimes that happens when you have a regime change. You get rid of the old kicker. You bring in someone you're comfortable with. Fine, whatever. You made that decision. But it's not like Connor Barth was great last year.
Right.
And I thought they should have used a draft pick on a kicker this year. Zane Gonzalez from Arizona State was a guy I liked in the draft. But they ended up trading some picks. And remember, they only drafted five guys. They did not have a sixth or seventh round pick to use on a kicker. Understandable given the way the draft played out. Fine. But there's a guy named Jake Elliott who played at Lions Township, a local kid here in Chicago, who went to Memphis. It was at the Senior Bowl, and he ended up getting drafted by the Bengals in the fifth round, but he was let go at the end of training camp and was signed to their practice squad. And given what happened with Roberto Aguayo in training camp and that whole thing that did completely blew up in the Bears' face, that was an opportunity to maybe sign Elliott instead. Now, they would have had to immediately add him to the 53-man roster, and that would have probably meant letting go of Barth in favor of a rookie who's never kicked for you. But guess what? The Eagles did that. The Eagles did that, and this kid's been killing it for the Eagles, a first-place team right now. So there are some questionable moves at kicker and some missed opportunities that the Bears have had. And right now, they're probably going to be scrambling in the bye week, bringing in more options to try out. And I just don't know that there's any solutions out there. I think the Bears already missed the boat on this.
All right, quick. Jarrell Freeman gets a 10-game suspension for PEDs. This is his second suspension, 2 years in a row, so that's why it's such a length. It's going to begin immediately, and he's actually out pretty much for the whole year. What do you know about this situation? What should we take away as Bears fans?
Well, it's a different situation than Zach Miller, but it's similar in that, hey, this is really isn't about football. It's about, you know, just hoping a guy is okay and whatever happens in the rest of his career, if there is a rest of the career, really just hope that he has a happy, healthy life. Because while the injury was the pec, and that's what put him on IR, he suffered a concussion in that game and played through it. And I had a suspicion that maybe those symptoms were lingering, because I periodically saw Jarrell Freeman walk in the halls at Hallis Hall, you know, over the last couple months since that week one game, and he was still wearing sunglasses. Up until this week, I saw him in the locker room this week, and he wasn't wearing sunglasses. And that's usually, you know, a doctor's orders of, you know, or helping your symptoms when you're wearing sunglasses indoors after a concussion. And basically, after he gets, the NFL announces today that he's suspended 10 games, he came out with a pretty heartfelt statement on Twitter, and I'm just paraphrasing that, but basically he had been lying about the symptoms with his with his concussion, not being truthful with family and friends, even that he was experiencing some memory loss even. So this was a scary situation, and in his words, he addressed the problem by taking pills. And that's what that's how he linked this suspension to what's been going on with him. And so I imagine his career with the Bears is over, and with a 10-game suspension looming, two of those games will carry into next season. I'm not sure he'll catch on anywhere else, but at this point, I'm not sure that matters. Like, he needs to take care of himself.
Jeez. That's a tough story to hear for a guy that Chicago, we liked. I mean, he got hurt, so we're used to injuries here in town, but he was someone that we saw as a piece of the puzzle.
I think, you know, it's interesting. I was actually on my flight home this morning writing a piece for my 10 Bears thing, starting to work ahead for this week, and I had already written down in this thing that with the emergence of Christian Jones and Nick Kwiatkowski, that Jarrell Freeman was probably not going to be here anyway going forward, even though he's played well when he's been out there. And then I land, and that's when the suspension gets announced on top of this. Right. So, I think his time with the Bears is over.
All right, last question, just about some movement in the NFL. Jimmy Garoppolo, a famous name that was thrown around draft night and on the offseason, looks to be moving on to San Francisco in a deal for a second rounder. The first question I asked when I saw it, Pete told me about it. I'm like, is that our second rounder from all the picks we gave the Niners? But talk about this, a midseason trade. Rarely do you see this thing.
Well, and it's a fascinating trade because what the Patriots were going to do with Garoppolo and the Tom Brady situation has really been a top story in the entire league for a while now, especially after winning the Super Bowl last year. Garoppolo is a good player. I liked him coming out. I had a second round grade on him coming out of Eastern Illinois. I've been high on him. I thought he looked good when he played early last season before he got hurt, when he filled in for Brady during Brady's suspension. And the question in the offseason was, what did the Patriots want for him? Because I wrote it. I said it multiple times. I thought he should be a target for the Bears. My understanding is that the Bears were interested in him. But it wasn't a great fit because the Patriots were asking for a first rounder, and the Bears were obviously not going to give up the number 3 overall pick for him. A late first rounder, if they had one, maybe, but not the number 3 overall pick. Yeah. And it didn't look like the early second round pick that the Bears had was going to be enough to get this deal done. Well, today, that ends up being what the Patriots get for him from the 49ers. An early second round pick, it's going to be the 49ers pick, and they're awful, so it's going to be an early pick in the second round. That doesn't mean, though, that they would have taken that back at draft time. I think they were asking for more at that point. And I think the Patriots, by waiting, were kind of hoping that there would be more offers, that maybe they could get more. And they were probably also waiting to see what Tom Brady looked like once the season came around? Would there be any kind of drop-off in his play? So it's a difficult situation to really evaluate because I'm sure there's Bears fans out there wondering, well, man, what if they didn't give up the number three pick?
Yeah.
Drafted like Jamal Adams or somebody on defense and then, you know, were able to trade the second-round pick for Garoppolo. How would things be different? We'll never know, but guess what? Jimmy Garoppolo will be at Soldier Field December 3rd in his homecoming
there you go.
To play the Bears, Trubisky versus Garoppolo. Suddenly that 49ers game looks a little bit more interesting.
Adam Hoge covers the Bears for WGN Radio. You can find it all at WGNradio.com/Bears, and he joins us every Monday for the Monday Evening Quarterback. Adam, bye week coming up, so we'll talk to you after the Bears beat the Packers the week after. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, real quick, the Bears rank 26 in yardage on first down. I just looked that up.
There you go. That's there you go. That's right up.
That helps explain some of the problems.